Back in on Canuck Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. I found out last night that a local Vancouver legend is no longer 24 hours a day, Sat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And do you want to talk about that place?
Duffin's Donuts. It closes at midnight now. I can't believe this.
At midnight.
What am I going to do if I ever want a donut at 1:30 in the morning?
Have you ever gone at 1:30 in the morning?
I have not, no.
Oh.
But I was there pretty late last night, and they kicked me out. And I was like, hey, what? You're 24 hours a day.
There are Tim's that are 24 hours, right?
Some of them.
So maybe that would be your best bet for a donut.
Well,
and you probably should not be having donuts at midnight anyways. But
yeah,
far be it from me giving you health advice.
I'm not the fit guy on the show, okay? We all know that. It's okay. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Kevin Woodley. It is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. What's happening, Woodley?
You know what? I'm not the fit guy anymore, Reach, because we all know that it's sad, but I'm no longer in that crew with him. You know what? Because I'm in a gas car now from White Rock Hyundai, and there's nothing wrong with that. I absolutely love it. We've talked about this before. It means I now stop at the gas station. And you know what they have at gas station? They have nibs.
Yeah.
And nibs are that's my Lex Luthor. That's my kryptonite. That's my mortal enemy and favorite thing all in the world. So it's gone poorly for me in 2025. I should have made some type of resolution. I did not. I continue to eat the nibs.
The candy bar is 2 for $4. I mean, I'm losing money if I don't buy this. So it's
listen, they got me today on the Red Bull, which I'm not supposed to be drinking after having to get strapped to a heart machine a couple of years ago because I drank too many of them. They're like, yeah, 2 for $5, 3 for $7, 5 for $10. I'm like, if I come home with 5 for $10, I'm probably getting divorced after the last time they sent me to the doctor. So,
well, if you want to raise the
stations are dangerous places. They're not where you should get your dietary, fill of anything, frankly.
The easy segue here is if you want to raise your blood pressure as a Canucks fan, just watch the Canucks because of the way that they've played lately. Certainly the blowouts have not been good. They've happened far too frequently this year. Last night, sure, there's a couple of bad ones on Kevin Lankinen, but more so on the team first here, Woodley. It's just been something that's kind of plagued them this year where there's just a lot of nights where they just don't have it.
Yeah, the no-shows are adding up, eh? And that's the thing, the benefit of the doubt as they add up starts to disappear, right? Because I want to give them the benefit of the doubt last night. That's the end of a tough 5-game road trip. That's one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. They are a wagon defensively. Vancouver is not the only team that has walked in there and gotten nothing on Connor Hellebuyck, who, by the way, when they do give something up, is the best goalie in the league right now. Or at least, he's going to win the Vezina. There are some other guys up there. But again, because of that shot quality and how little they give up, that's the only thing that would make it a race, right? There are other guys that are facing tougher chances. And so, the odds were stacked against them last night. And yet it was such a thud, such a no-show that it's, and because there's been so many of them to this point, and because they pissed away points against lesser teams with a handful of outings like this earlier in the year, the margin for error is gone. And the panic button, I'm not ready to press it just because of everything I just said about the Winnipeg Jets. Certainly more people are reaching for it after one game because of the way things have gone recently and because of the amount of times that they just haven't looked like a team that is, haven't looked like a team that knows what its identity is, but as they trended towards or something closer towards the defensive group they were last year, I think the fair question is whether they're a team that's willing to do the work required of that identity.
That kind of comes down to the whole commitment level thing. And that's what the head coach brought up yesterday and last night and kind of questioned the team's commitment. If you're having those questions after game 43, what are the chances of fixing that by the time you get to the end of the season and make the postseason?
Well, I don't think they're zero, because there is something, like the one thing, again, I'm not trying to give them too many outs here, but the one thing that the way they want to play, or the way the coach wants them to play, that you can fairly say about it, is it's not easy, right? Like, grinding teams down on the forecheck and the work rate required is not easy. Having the gaps that they had last year and the pressure they had through the neutral zone and making it tough on teams to break out against you is not easy. The wall work that Tocchet talks about, the guts of the ice, all those things that they want to be good at, things that I think translate come playoff time, as much as people in this market are maybe tired of watching them in the regular season, they're not easy. And they're certainly not easy to do night after night over an 82-game season, year after year. Mm-hmm. It was easy to get enthused, or easier to get enthused, last season for two reasons. One, they'd had no success, and so they were eager to change things and do the work required to do so. But two, as you have success with it, it's easier to continue buying into it. And so it gets a little harder to get up for it when things aren't working, and when it is a grind and you're in the dog days. And at times this year, it's looked like they thought it would be easy, and it wasn't, because playing that way requires the work rate to be there on a consistent basis. And I think we can all say fairly, and I think they would admit it as well, that it hasn't been on enough nights last night. And what you saw last night is what happens when it's not there against an elite team. And that was, you know, you get taken out to the woodshed.
Well, and I know we've talked about this before, but the whole notion of, is what Tocchet is preaching something that is working, as far as, can you have success in the NHL with this? Is he being too stubborn with his system? And are they generating enough chances? Because with the public data, and we talked about this before, they're pretty much dead last in most categories offensively.
They're not generating enough chances anymore. Right, like I pushed back on the public data notion. You know, when was the last time we talked about this? It feels like we talk about it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Or what, mid-December?
Yeah, about a month
right?
ago.
Like, you know, and so were they generating off the rush? No. Were they generating on-man rush? No. And again, I think as much as anything, you point to the back end for that.
Right.
Or at least for large portions of it. There are times when forwards aren't where they're supposed to be, and that makes it harder for the guys on the back end to create clean breakouts. But overall, like, I think you'd point to the back end. Like, how many years did we talk about all the skill the Oilers had, and yet nobody to get them the puck up front? So there's that. And that has never been there. But in the offensive zone, they did enough, you know, that the data I had, east-west, when you're cycling, east-west plays in the offensive zone, dots down offense, net front offense, those types of things in the offensive zone, to be a well-above-average team, to basically to the point where, and I'm trying to remember exactly where they were, guys. Like, we're not talking top, but like flirting with top 10 in the league offensively. That's what the rate they were scoring at. It was the rate where the underlying numbers were. Like, the numbers I had didn't paint that as an anomaly that required a shooting percentage heater, like the one they were on last year. So the offense was where it should be. Now the underlying has cratered over the last little while in terms of offensively. And how much of that is them trying to get back to the defensive identity and it limiting their offense, perhaps? How much of that is, again, to the personnel on the back end, especially without Philip Hronek up until last night, and without Quinn Hughes for a stretch of games? You know, it's not there. So I'm not going to, as much as I push back on the public stuff through mid-December or so, because they still were doing a lot of good things off the cycle in the offensive zone, enough to say that this was a team that could have success in the playoffs. Like, their last handful of games, what, they generated 1.3 expected goals last night. Against the Leafs, it was 1.5, and they got 3, a couple of bounces. Against Carolina, they had 1 high-danger chance and 0.62 expected goals. The Washington Capitals, that was kind of the last time where they generated. Like, that was a goalie victory. That was a stolen win. They had 11 high danger and almost 5 expected goals against the Capitals, and they ran into Logan Thompson. But in the 3 games since, like, barely over 1 and under 1, which, like, that one in the one in Carolina was, like, to have 1 high danger chance and less than a goal, barely over half a goal in expected offense, that's bad. So And then in Montreal, where they generated to start this trip, where they did generate enough and got some goals, they gave up 11 high danger and close to 4 expected goals against. So that inability to sort of match the effort at both ends of the ice consistently has been a problem all season. And of late, yes, the underlying says they are not generating. Kind of matches what everyone was complaining about in December, but I'd still push back that up till that point, it wasn't the problem others were making it out to be, other than off the rush. And again, for all the talk in the preseason and all the talk in training camp, the reality is they've just never been a great rush team. And when you look at the personnel for all the praise and all the people that are out there, and I hear it and I see it, you know, like the coach needs to get more out of this group and they're capable. Look at all the talent here. Like, who on this team, other than Quinn Hughes, is the kind of player that generates off the rush?
Yeah.
Like, even their skilled players aren't fast players. So yeah. I'm just not sure you have the personnel. And so if the argument is he needs to find a way to get more out of them off the rush, I'm just not sure they have the horses for that. And that might be square peg, round hole, because it went so well for Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah. And at the same time, like, there's only on the talk it note, like, there's only so much he can do to, like, he can't go out there and play the game for Pettersson and Miller and have them be a lot better than they have been through the first half of the season. A lot of this fixes itself if Pettersson and Miller start to find their games a little bit. As much as, yeah, they could use some help on the back end and all of that, I mean, it wasn't as much of an issue last year, and Pettersson has always been able to generate even without Quinn Hughes in his rookie year. So I'm just not sure what's going on there that Pettersson and Miller it's the ongoing question over the last year. Like, okay, whatever's happening off the ice is happening off the ice, but you can be better on the ice at the same time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to let them off. I mean, I think pretty clearly last night, you know, and he probably won't talk about it or cop to it, but it seems pretty clear that JT Miller's not 100%. And again, I'm not trying to gift him an out here, mm-hmm. But if he is, then you have a real problem. I guess I would put it that way. You know, and I will push back a little bit, Reach. Like, I hear 100% what you're saying, and it's all accurate, except I think they took a step back on the back end from last year to this year.
Fair.
Right? Like, you know, and part of that is injuries. And part of that is like Carson Soucy is not the Carson Soucy he was last year.
No.
And how much of that is of late the fact that Myers has moved up and so they aren't playing together and he doesn't have the city. Like, he just doesn't look like himself either.
Ian Cole was super underrated, especially his first 50 games of the season.
100%. Derek Forbort's had some really good games, but he's also been a guy that struggled to stay in the lineup before he got here. And so counting on him to be an 82-game guy probably wasn't realistic. And yes, absolutely, Ian Cole hit a wall, had an injury that limited him in the playoffs last year. But I do think what he brought to this team, and interestingly enough, I think not just on the ice, but in the locker room,
yeah,
is missed. Like, so I think that outside of the top pairing, and it's been injured, so everybody moves up and plays sort of out of where they were before. Like, Carson Soucy not having the year he did last year, defensively too. Like, he's a guy that normally just, like, gets where rush chances go to die, and that hasn't been the case. The bottom pairing is not nearly as effective, and obviously the end of the year was Zadorov on that, you know, in that bottom four. So I fully understand why you couldn't retain him, but I think on the margins, where we talk about, you know, Jim Rutherford talked about this when they hired him, you know, like, the right two people in, the right one or two people in, and the right one or two people out, I think it's fair to make an argument that on the back end, that they weren't necessarily the right one or two in or out, and it's affecting them,
yeah,
especially when there's other factors like injury in terms of their ability to get out of their own end. And I am not pinning Pettersson and Miller's, you know, decreased production and lack of effectiveness exclusively on the inability to get the puck out, but I do think it would be naive to ignore it completely.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And the biggest failure for from the front office was how they addressed the blue line this offseason. And, you know, the whole idea of addressing it in season seems to be a big challenge, and we'll see how that goes as the season goes on. But as far as switching gears to goaltending and, you know, the performance we saw from Kevin Lankinen last night, and we've talked a lot about how Kevin Lankinen has been great. I know the public data is not showing how good he's been compared to what the ClearSight analytics data has and what you kind of seen from his game. But last night, obviously, probably wasn't up to snuff from his standards either, was it?
No, I mean, it was two lows, two mids, and two highs, right?
Yeah.
Like, you give up one low and your team's in tough to win. You give up two low and that's a tough night. How many times have we heard him praised for his puck handling and how effective he is out there at getting out there and stopping pucks? And, you know, I was curious whether that was a mistake or a miscommunication. You've got Hronek back after being out for almost 2 months. But at the end of the day, on a night where you were automatically going to be in tough against a team that makes it so hard to score against one of the best goalies in the league, to hand them a free one out of the gate hurts. But it's the old Mike Smith thing. Like, he learned early in his career from Marty Turco, you know, you make a mistake, you don't stop doing it, because this is part of why you're here. And Kevin Lankinen's puck handling has been something the coaching staff was praised. So tough break on that one. I will say overall, though, like, there were some tough goals. There are some goals that statistically don't help his cause for sure. But, you know, like what was that? 7 appearances in 8 games for him last night?
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, when I was on the morning show on Monday, I said I could fully understand why they would go back to him. And so you can say this is revisionist history. I'm not going to ignore the fact that I said I understood it. But the more I looked at it and the more I looked at the starts, it made less sense. And like I said, easy to say in hindsight, but I could share a group chat that shows you I said it right before. it's like, once I realized how much he started, because that's the only time we've seen that fall off, is when you sort of get into the 7 out of 8 range. And listen, like, once Demko came back, and I realized that the back injury threw this off, but they seem to be in a rotation. And so if you're in a rotation, stick with your rotation. And I get that people are going to say, and I said it on Monday, okay, I get it, I understand, the guy's coming off a shutout, you want to reward it. But then I looked up the numbers on the shutout. Toronto had 20 shots, 3 of them were high danger, the expected goals were 1.24. You talk about the Canucks not pissing a drop last night, that was the Maple Leafs on Saturday. As much as we wanted to give Vancouver their flowers for how well they defended, that was a no-show on the Maple Leafs end as well. And so you're really going to change your plan and your pattern and go away from a guy who was a Vezina Trophy finalist last year based on a shutout where, like, full marks, he made the 3 tough saves he had to make in that game, but that's all he was asked to do. And so as you're trying to get both of these guys up and going, that one's a bit of a head scratcher, especially when it now sets you up for Demko against LA, when it was Lankinen that had success against them earlier this season, and then potentially Lankinen in Edmonton when that was a team that hung a crooked number on him the last time he played. So easy to do from the couch. I guess I'm Monday morning quarterbacking the goaltending decision on that one, and I don't think it makes a difference in terms of the result last night, because you could have had both of them standing side by side in net, and they probably still would have lost that game given the effort in front of the goaltenders. But in retrospect, and easy to do, the decision becomes even more curious when you look at the games played and you look at what appeared to be a rotation, and inevitably the second guessing that coming out of that rotation can create even internally.
Yeah, and one of the thoughts that we got a ton on the post-game show and continue to see today on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox is, why didn't Tocchet pull Lankinen? And I guess the moment would have been after the 4th goal, but at that point, I guess you're managing the situation and understanding, hey, we're probably playing Demko on Thursday against LA. Why bring him in cold and put him at risk in that kind of a situation where we're clearly having an off night? To me, it didn't really. I kind of agreed with Tocchet to not make the coaching the goalie change there.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know how that conversation went. I don't know how those conversations have shifted. But, like, how often has Tocchet pulled a starting goaltender?
Very rarely.
Since he's been here.
Yeah.
Feels like it's a rare occurrence for starters, so you got to consider past behavior, predicting future, and all that stuff. you'd like to think that the injury history doesn't play a role in it. But if you were going to do it, it would be between periods where Thatcher has a chance to go through as much of a dynamic sort of re-warm up. I mean, he does all that work even when he's backing up anyways, but just make sure that everything's stretched out and rolled out and sort of warmed up properly before he goes into the net, as opposed to, you know, 2 minutes into the second period, unless you'd given him a warning to do that work and make sure he was prepped physically. Why would you risk injury in a night where it was clearly not your night? But on the flip side, I would say, as much as you like resting him for Thursday, I honestly don't see that part of it, to be truthful, because today's a day off. If anything, I would think that the reps would help. He hasn't played that much, unless the back injury, and he talked to Ian McIntyre about it being tight going into the Seattle game, unless there's still some tightness. Like, I would have thought the reps could have been beneficial, because we're at a point where that's the only thing he's missing, right? If there's nothing physically restraining him, his movements, everything I watch in his game looks fine. It's just timing and reps. And so I think you could counter argue that and say, you know, with a day off today, it's not like playing a period or two in Winnipeg would have worn him out. I hear the argument that I wouldn't have wanted him out there behind that team the way they were defending at the start of the game and for periods within the game. But in terms of getting him some more reps and some more minutes, you could almost view it like sometimes coaches put their goalie in at the end of a blowout to get their feet wet before they play their next start. Even on back-to-backs, we've seen it the odd time.
Is it part of the reasoning just simply treating Lankinen as a starter right now?
Could be. Like I said, I don't want to, you know, I'm just painting it from sort of the outside, not privy to those conversations, but that could certainly be part of it. And like I said, Rick Tocchet's been loath to pull his starting goaltender. Like, that hasn't been his MO. He is not Mike Keenan. So, you know, it may be any one of those. I don't pretend to have inside knowledge on that. But when I walk through the different scenarios, like I said, to me, from the outside looking in, I don't know that a period or two would have killed Thatcher Demko in terms of Thursday. I think you could even make the argument, given the lack of reps, that it might have helped him.
Before we let you go, you mentioned Hellebuck earlier. There was some love for Hellebuck getting some Hart Trophy mentions earlier this week as everybody's doing their kind of mid-season assessment. How do you feel about Connor Hellebuck potentially being the rare goalie that gets mentioned in the Hart Trophy conversation?
Well, what's he at? Like 928 last I checked, closing on 930. Yeah. You know, it used to be it took a 940 to get you in that conversation. That was the number, as artificial as it sounds, that was the number that Shesterkin was flirting with the year he did it, or the year he was in that conversation. And it kind of felt like, listening to people talk, like that was like a magic number he would have to stay at. Well, how much has save percentage dropped since then? Like a 930 is damn near the same number anyways, when you look at the way the teams and the league is counting shots, how much stingier they've been, how much harder the game is in terms of teams not wasting shots, not wasting low danger chances, and always looking for quality, which is one of the reasons save percentage has dropped. And so if he finishes 930 or above, sure. As arbitrary as that sounds, at the end of the day, as good as he's been, I talked earlier about how good they are defensively in Winnipeg, like second best team in the league, high danger 5-on-5 chances against, fourth best off the rush. Like, they are really, really good at both ends of the rink. And so when I look at his goals saved above expected right now, he's actually second in the league. Logan Thompson is slightly ahead of him right now. And Igor Shesterkin's 2.5-3 goals behind him. So the year that Igor won his Vezina and was mentioned in the Hart, like, he was lapping the field. And we don't see that same margin. So it'll be interesting to see, because to me, what he's doing, like, seriously, as many shutouts as regulation losses halfway through a season, like, that's remarkable. And it's worthy of slam dunk third Vezina trophy. It's worthy of all the conversations about Hart, because the way they defend is fueled in part by their belief in him, right? Like, there's a difference between a team that defends really well because they're scared to give anything up behind their goaltender, and a team that plays with the freedom they do offensively and still defends well, in part because they know their goaltender's got their back. And so, like, please don't get me wrong when I point out these numbers and show you that the margins with which he's dominating the league on the adjusted scales aren't the same as the raw numbers. He is that important to that team, and I would make the argument that he deserves that. But they are incredible defensively. He is a big part of that, but you can't ignore it at the same time. Like, there are other teams, other goalies being asked to do more, especially when you think of Logan Thompson. Like, he's seen almost 260 fewer shots, and he's still passed him in goals saved above expected. Sort of goals saved above expected per 100 shots, he's a full goal better. Now, is that going to last? We'll see. He's about to get a number one role because Charlie Lindgren's out with a concussion. Let's see if Logan Thompson can keep it up now that it's not a rotation, because part of what Hellebuck does is gives you consistency every night while playing more than pretty much anyone except UC Soros. And that all matters and that all counts. So he's going to win a Vezina unless literally the bottom falls out or Mackenzie Blackwood goes on a second half heater to end all heaters. He's only 6 goals behind him in goals saved above expected. And he'd be full value for it. But we can't ignore how good this team is as part of this conversation. This isn't the year Semyon Varlamov should have won it. And Tuukka Rask did, because Varlamov was stopping bullets in his teeth in Colorado for Patrick Waugh. Connor Hellebuck has a pretty good supporting cast right now at both ends of the rink.
Woodley, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys.
There he is. The best. The goalie guru in Goal Magazine, NHL.com. It's Kevin Woodley on Sports at 650, and he was brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. Get set for adventure. Discovery Channel has moved. All the latest seasons of your Discovery favorites are available on Channel 411 on Rogers Xfinity TV. We've got Overrated, Underrated coming up next. A lot of your topics for us next on Canuck Central.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.